You're listening to Mind Over Markets, a podcast on trading psychology to help you build a bulletproof mindset. Here's your hosts, George Papazov and Mark Borscht.
Hello, trade pros, and welcome back to another episode of the Mind Over Markets podcast with your hosts, myself, Mark Borscht,
and George Papazov from Trade Pro Academy.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. In today's episode, we are going to be discussing a topic that we honestly believe is going to help a lot of traders. And obviously, that's the reason why we put this together. And the topic is the psychology behind why every trade idea is not necessarily a trade that you should take. Okay, and the idea behind this is that new traders, as well as traders that are struggling to find consistent profitability, they tend to find themselves in somewhat of a hamster wheel of frustration. And this hamster wheel of frustration generally tends to occur as a result of wanting to jump into every single trade idea that they come up with in an attempt to make as much money as possible, as quickly as possible. Now, the issue with this approach really comes down to the simple fact that quality always trumps quantity, all right? And the real key to finding profitability in trading is to only execute on those highest probability setups, because at the end of the day, that's where you have positive expectancy. So we always mention that making money is really the easy part of the industry. The difficulty in this industry is more so in keeping the profits, right? A lot of traders struggle not with making the money, but with keeping the money as they continue to trade. And the real difference between the pros and the traders that are still unprofitable is that the professionals have the self-awareness to pass on potential trade ideas if the market doesn't give them exactly what they want to see. Whereas the losing trader will come up with a trade idea and they will basically talk themselves into taking it regardless of the quality of the setup. And our goal with today's episode is to help you guys get some actionable solutions you can use as a trading psychology strategy in order to find that right balance between identifying your ideas and only executing on the best ones.
Thank you, Marky. That was a great introduction. And I want to mention as well that we're recording this from home. This is one of those pandemic episodes. And so, you know, it's so funny because we work so hard at Trade Pro Academy. So this thing is legitimate enough that it's not just two dudes in their bedroom. Yeah, here we are. Back to just two dudes in their bedroom recording a podcast. So, you know, it's a shame.
Right here.
Yeah, grassroots effort today. We're in a pandemic in Toronto and Canada, in Ontario is the province. There's a lockdown at the moment, so we can't be in the office. Got thousands of dollars of equipment sitting there for a podcast, and we can't use it. So thank you guys for you know, staying with us and understanding during these difficult times. Audio might not be 100% what it used to be, but the content's still great. Here's a message for today's podcast. Many people get good at reading the market, but fumble when it comes time to executing their trades. It's easy to be an analyst, but taking risk is what makes you a trader. If you feel hesitation or fear before a trade, this is a sign you need to invest more time in developing your trading psychology, not your system or trading plan. Our psychology course is built on advanced neuro-linguistic programming concepts proven to shift your mindset to a winner and to rewire your brain to accept the fact you deserve success. It will change your life first and improve your trading as a result. Join the Elite membership today and unlock the user manual for your brain. Visit us at TradeProAcademy.com. And now, back to the show.
Back to the show. Thank you for that great message. Now, guys, before we really dive in, do the deep dive into the concept of trade ideas versus actually executing on them, I think it's important to take a moment first to pull back the curtain on thoughts, you know, on thoughts and the thoughts that we have in our day-to-day lives and how these thoughts can kind of translate or show themselves as it relates to your trading. So I'm curious to know if you guys have any idea what the number of average thoughts a human has on a daily basis. If you had to guess, what would you think it is, Georgie?
I thought it would be more than this amount. I have an unfair edge because I could see the notes. But I honestly thought it would be more. It was surprising. And it confirmed there's multiple sources. But 6,200 thoughts a day the average human being has. I think that's confused with coherent thoughts. You know, you might have some feelings and of ideas of what's going through your head, but you can't quantify it. I think 6,200 readable thoughts a day. And a lot of these thoughts, Marky, end up being like ideas. Like you could just be doing something like riding the streetcar to work, whatever. Hey, I should clean my car. Well, you wouldn't be thinking that if you're riding the streetcar, but I'll work out today. Hey, I should clean my apartment or whatever the case might be, you know, and these things pop up. 6,200 thoughts a day works out to 6.5 thoughts a minute. All right. And so I think it's important for this. What thoughts did you have as I was saying that? Because that took about a minute.
I don't know, but I had several of them. That's for sure.
that's good. So, you know, how many of these thoughts turn to action, right? This is the whole premise of the introduction to this show is that very few, you know, most of these thoughts enter your brain and then exit without any meaningful action, right? It's just like it comes in and then it comes out the other ear. Well, trading ideas are the same thing. It's a thought. And, you know, it's a thought about the market, but it isn't really a call to action. An idea doesn't have to materialize into taking action. In fact, your brain is used to dismissing a lot of the information you deal with. Your brain does one of three things. It deletes, distorts, and generalizes information. Because if you were to interpret every bit of information you're faced with in this world, you know, you would live something like 8 years. That's it. It would take you that long to process all the info. And so, rather than 70 being the average age. So what I'm saying is that, you know, look at trade ideas as opportunities. It's just a thought, but not all opportunities are the same and not all deserve your capital and mental energy. You know, our trading room is an example of that, Marky. We have a lot of ideas, but we only execute a few. I'll, on the mic on any given day, I'll probably talk about 10, 15 trade levels, but I'll have 2 to 3 trades. On Friday, I had none. Or not Friday, Wednesday, which is like a Friday this week because we're recording this on Thanksgiving Friday. But, you know, there's a lot of ideas that the market will throw at you. And if you watch multiple markets, you could have tens of ideas a day at least, hundreds maybe, but you can't take them all. It's impossible. So I think this is an important way to preface this is to separate the fact that an idea needs to lead to action. And I think more importantly, if you have an idea and you don't take action on it, I don't think you have to feel bad about that. Not every idea has to have action that results. Some of them just flow in and flow out.
Exactly. And I just wanted to add to that, you know, the comparison between your day-to-day life, the thoughts that you have and whether you action them or not is very similar, like you mentioned, to trading, right? I find it a little bit interesting in the sense that, you know, in our day-to-day lives, we don't action every single thought we have, but as new traders, you tend to do the opposite. You tend to have an idea and then you action that idea because you might not necessarily have, you know, the right expectations in mind. And I think this is an interesting topic because, like Georgie mentioned, in our trading room, you know, people are often surprised at how many ideas we have, but how little we actually take. You know, how many trades we actually take. And I think Chris, you know, we're not going to name full names, but Chris in our room, he came to one of our first boot camps and he mentioned the same. He said, I didn't realize how much you guys sit on your hands and just disqualify trades. And, you know, now he's doing really, really well. And when he, you know, he's gone to a role now where he's giving advice to our community as well. And it's literally the same advice. It's not every single idea is a good idea. And the difference between the pros and the amateurs is that the pros are fine. They have that self-awareness to be able to identify what's happening in the market as a potential idea. But when it actually comes time to execute, you know, they're able to have that awareness to say, is this the highest probability setup? Do I have a positive expectancy? And just because the zone is, or rather the market's trading, you know, based on what their idea is doing, that doesn't mean that there's a trade there, right? And so the whole idea with today's show is to kind of get you to understand the fact that you know, not having a trade is still considered being a trader, right? But different setups have different qualities, right? And so if you're looking at a certain setup, there's, you know, an A plus down to even a C for that certain setup, right? And we're going to discuss this in a little bit, but I just wanted to get you guys to see that comparison between how you think on a day-to-day basis and how you act or don't act on that, and why that's different in trading, right? So what is referred to as a call to action for a trading idea, right? A lot of the times when you have that idea, it doesn't mean that you just want to execute right away. Like we said, you want to be able to filter out opportunities in order to find the best ones. And one of the ways that we kind of teach, and it's methods that we like to use ourselves, is to have qualifiers. All right. And qualifiers are simply part of your plan. So if you imagine qualifiers in a different sense, just think of it like a checklist. All right. It's a checklist that you have to follow in order to qualify whether a trade is a good opportunity or not. And what you want to do with this is identify which qualifiers you need to see in order to get in the market, right? And this has to be clear, guys. There's got to be no gray area. It's got to be binary, right? If I see XYZ, it's probably a good trade. What would you have to say to that?
Well, yeah, that's fascinating. Now we're getting into the discussion of how to action these ideas, right? And I think it's important for people to realize that you're allowed to let go of ideas. Every idea turns into action. Which ones do turn into action? I like your example there of qualifiers, Mark. I use the 747, the Boeing example, probably the least efficient aircraft in terms of fuel now, because it's got four massive engines that just ingest that jet fuel. But, you know, if you think of it, a 747's got four engines, a very heavy airplane. And so it needs all four to take off efficiently. It could probably do it on less, but it would be an emergency situation. So what you're looking for is four catalysts for a reason that you like the trade. So any idea that you could say, hey, you know what? I like it because, I'll give you an example. I like the S&P 500 long because NASDAQ's going up. But if that's the only thing that you like about it, you have a 747 with one engine on the runway. You're not going to take off. And so you need to find other catalysts or other qualifiers to make that idea an actionable opportunity. Because if you threw all your money at once at every idea, you'd be broke before the day ended, right? Because there's just too many of them. So you have to handpick the good ones. There's a systematic approach that you use for that. But for me, what I look at is I need four good qualifiers. I need four engines for this trade to take to the skies and to have an opportunity for me. And so that's what I like to do, is look at these qualifiers. NASDAQ's one of them. You know, I like to look at footprint charts, which is order flow driven. I like to look at bids and offers, also order flow driven. I like to not only look at them in isolation, but how they change, how they move. There's a lot that we could talk about in this. All you need to know is you need qualifiers for your system. Like, you need engines to give you some extra boost to take off. All right. And these qualifiers could change on market conditions too. You know, and since the word mark is in market conditions, you got anything else here, Marky?
Caught me off guard there. Yeah, definitely. So, you know, you mentioned the idea of having qualifiers, and it's super important, because having qualifiers in place will help you filter out the ideas that are just that, just ideas, right? They're not good opportunities. And again, this just relates back to what we mentioned earlier, in the sense that it's a lot easier to make money than it is to keep it. And if you're going to stick around in the long term here, the idea is that you're going to be taking trade. Each trade you take has a positive expectancy, right? You have an idea, or you have odds that it's going to work out in your favor more often than it doesn't. Or not that it's going to work out in your favor. You don't have to be right to make money. You just have to follow risk management rules and execute when the highest amount of qualifiers are in your favor, right? So kind of going to George's example, he likes the Boeing. You know, I kind of like that idea as well. One of the other things that I like to do for myself, and I actually learned this from one of the traders in our room, is to kind of walk through the qualifiers when I'm seeing the idea. So let's use an example. All right. Let's say the market is running a little bit higher. It's running into a resistance level, a zone where I'm anticipating sellers to come in. All right. And just because I'm anticipating sellers to come in there, I can look at order flow and the order flow showing me, you know, we had some aggressive sell imbalances at that level as it left. So on the way back up, theoretically, we should see sellers come back in to defend that level, right? That doesn't mean that I'm just going to set a limit there and hope for the best, right? That's not a qualifier. What I found works well for me and has helped keep my psychology in check when making an idea versus executing on it is actually walking through the qualifiers and seeing if I have difficulty disqualifying the trade. Right. So it's a little bit of a paradigm shift here where it's not that you're trying to qualify the trade, it's that you're trying to disqualify the trade. And if you can't disqualify the trade, then it's probably a good trade.
Right? And so that's a good approach too. You know, looking at the flip side, it's like that assumes the Boeing's already flying and you got to keep four engines in order to keep flying. Otherwise, it's an emergency and you declare it and land. You know, I like that. That's a good approach. Is that something Chris talked about?
This was from David.
From David. Nice.
Yeah, this was from David when we kind of originally met and joined in Trade Pro. But that's one of the ideas, right? And then the other idea here is you just got to understand that you don't need to know what's going to happen, right? And if the market comes into your level, for example, and a trade does not form, right, that has nothing to do with you personally. All right. It's not that, oh, my trade idea was wrong, I don't know what I'm doing, and you start losing trust in your analysis. You just had a hypothesis. Consider it like this. A trade idea is just a hypothesis. All right. It's simply a hypothesis that the market's going to do one thing over the other. All right. And then once it actually comes into your level, that is where the hypothesis is being tested. All right. You're starting to see, I'm imagining that if it comes into this level, we're going to start seeing selling pressure. That's the hypothesis. Now, as the market trades into that level, is your hypothesis being proved true or is it being proved as, you know, incorrect? And based on that information that you're seeing in the real time, you've got a choice to make now. Are my qualifiers there? If yes, perfect. You take that trade. Right. Another great strategy that you can kind of apply is to speak aloud. All right, speak aloud. And the reason why this is because it allows you to be both the speaker, right? Because if you audibly dictate what you're seeing in the market, you're going to be able to hear that, obviously. So rather, you're going to be the speaker, so you're going to be saying it. And on the same pane, you're also going to be the listener. So you're going to be able to hear what you're saying out loud. All right. And this strategy gives you greater objectivity in the sense that you become more aware of the ideas that you have. And it kind of adds like another layer of mindfulness to what you're doing. Right. So going back to that example, if I have an impulse to maybe buy the market or even sell the market because of the way it's moving and I don't want it to move against me, then if I say out loud to myself what I'm thinking about doing, right then and there, you can catch yourself, right? You can recognize if that sounds ridiculous, right? If you're looking to get short a market that's just tearing higher and you audibly dictate that, and then you're going to hear that, you're going to see what's happening and you're going to question, wait a second, is that really a good idea? Is this really what I should be doing? Is this really part of my plan? You know, is this part of my risk management? Am I being completely reactive, right? If you audibly dictate what you're thinking of doing, what your intentions are, and it comes out as illogical, it doesn't really make sense, or even if it's something that you'd be embarrassed telling maybe another valued trader or maybe another trader in the community, then guess what? Probably an opportunity that you're going to want to skip out on, right? So doing this effectively helps you get another layer of self-observation into play, right? Because when you talk out loud, it's very useful in helping us remain accountable and in really identifying which opportunities are the ones that we should be risking our capital on. And don't forget, guys, when you put on risk capital, it's not only the money in your account that you're putting at risk, it's also your mental capital. All right? So if you're making the decision, especially the first trade of the day, you want to make sure that that trade is a high probability trade, right? Because if it's not and you take it, then that really opens up the doors for you to start doing emotional things in order to kind of revenge back those losses. So these are a couple of things that you will want to use as it relates to a call to action for a trading idea to actually become a trade that you execute on.
I love it, Marky. You know, reading back something to yourself is something we used to use on the trading desk. We would read back tickets to clients. And the reason is just to make sure that what we're about to do on the market reflected what their intention was. And so these readbacks, you look at, you know, pilots, they do the same thing. They do readbacks and go through checklists, et cetera. And also it gives us like a feedback, an instant feedback process. Because what feedback mechanism do we have in trading? Usually our results, which take a whole day to develop. But if you really listen to what you're saying in real time, you have a feedback that leads to the results, right? You don't have to wait for the results. You know, have you ever thought of something in your mind? You've rehearsed it so many times. Like, when I see this person, I'm going to tell them exactly how I feel. And then you have this plan. And then you say, and at the end, you yourself are like, damn, that was kind of harsh.
Yeah.
Right? You're like, I didn't really need to, like, oh, wow. And you know, that's instant feedback. And I think speaking it and reading it out loud is really important in trading. This is really cool. I'm glad you brought that up in the podcast. I definitely would recommend everyone speak out, not just their trades, but their ideas as well. Because when you can hear them, it sounds different than in your mind. And your mind could bend and mend things to make up its own rules as you go, right? That's what it does. It's a processing unit. But your ears are not processing units. They're just receptive of info. So this is a really good one, Marky. I'm happy you brought it up.
Awesome. And I, you know, as you mentioned that, it made me reflect. And the reason why I'm kind of laughing, again, oftentimes you hear me laughing. It's either George said something or I remember something from my own personal trading experience that kind of rings a bell. And what you just said there kind of brought me back to one of those situations where I remember earlier on, a lot of the dumb trades that I was taking were trades that in my mind seemed like a good idea at the time, you know, and right away it fades, right? And more so, there's a specific fade. there's a specific one that I remember that was really dumb. And I remember we were in the trading room. I think you and Vic were both bias short. And I was of the opinion, you know, this thing's taking, in my head, you know, this thing's taking too long to drop down. It's probably got to pop, right? And so in my head, you know, that sounded like a great idea at the time. So I took the trade only to get slapped. And I'm pretty sure it was either you or Vic that were on the trade, but on the short side. And when I review that at the time, you know, after the day was done, I literally thought to myself, like, this, obviously hindsight is 2020, but I literally thought to myself, and it was like, if I were to give this trade idea to myself at the time, like if I would have actually audibly put it out there, I would have thought it was stupid. Because even before I took the trade, you know, like order flow was telling me bearish, market structure was telling me bearish, but that little contrarian in me wanted to take it. And it kind of, I guess I created the story for why that would be a good idea, but that was just it. I was executing on the idea and not on the plan, right? I didn't qualify the trade. There weren't four qualifiers. I couldn't disqualify it based on what I was seeing. Rather, I couldn't qualify it based on what I was seeing, but I still took it. And I think that is exactly what we're trying to get to the core of in today's episode, is to get you from having that trade idea and executing it to giving yourself that moment to catch any, you know, any beliefs you might be having about what you're seeing or what you want to see or what you want to happen, and only really trade on the facts of what you're seeing And if the qualifiers are there, perfect. That's probably a good trade. If it's not, you're likely giving yourself a story why your idea should be a successful trade. So that's really kind of what I wanted to add to that. And really based on the experiences, it's funny how that works, right?
Yeah, it's no surprise that it's faders. Those faders really pull you in emotionally. Not you, just tend to do it to everybody, every trader. And, you know, you mentioned a gold nugget there. You know, subconscious mind will always look to justify a decision you've already made, right? It doesn't take things as a fresh slate. It's like once you make a decision, you're changing the course of how you process future information about that decision. Also, wants to justify, hey, here's why you did that. And, you know, that's dangerous. And I think what you could learn from this intro is, this is a long-winded intro with a lot of value, is that it's not about going from an idea to an execution quickly. More likely than not, you should take more time in that transition process. Everyone wants to go idea to trade really quick. What you really should be doing is the other way around. Don't look to make that path short. Look to make it longer, because it's when you decide you're going to do the trade, it's too late. You're going to do the trade at that point. But I think it's the moment from the level is hit to the time you get in a trade. You know, people try to rush that process. And I think if you find good qualifiers, if you slow it down, if you think more, because one way to look at it is I'm going to miss the trade. The other way to look at it is this is my last moment to really think before I have to put down, you know? Yeah. And so look at this as your last thinking moment, you know, the last like tune-ups before it's rock and roll time.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great point. So now that you guys have a general idea of, you know, the thoughts that you have, how they turn into ideas, and whether or not you should execute on them, let's take a moment to kind of break down the process, right? The trading process, because it's easy to just say, you know, when you've got the trade idea, just wait for it, wait to qualify it, and you either take it or you don't. But there is an inherent process that you want to follow, right? And the process in itself, it can be broken down between two categories, if you will, right? So you've got the formation of your trade idea. This is how you get to the point where you believe that you've got a potential opportunity in the markets. And then the second category is really the execution. So the first part of it is basically coming to that idea. The second part of it is now executing on the idea, right? Once you get past the first part, the second part, you're not really thinking at that point. As odd as it sounds to say, you are simply acting, all right? So the first part is your trade idea formation. The second part is the actual execution. So how does this process start? Well, first and foremost, you know, if you guys have been listening to us for any part of time, you'll know that how you prepare for the day is how you set yourself up to have that day, right? So first and foremost, before you even start, you got to make sure your mind is in the right place and you've got your wellness routine in check, right? Whether that's waking up in the morning, doing some stretching, maybe doing some running, working out, etc., doing some meditation, you got to get yourself in the right place to make the right decisions, right? Because at the end of the day, we are in an industry where you have to perform. You eat what you kill. And if you don't come in with the right mindset, you shouldn't even be sat at the desk at all. So first and foremost, your morning mindset and wellness routine.
And if you want to know how to build a good morning routine for success, episode 26 of Mind Over Markets is, you know, if you're curious, how would I build a morning routine for success? Episode 26 title is How to Build a Morning Routine for Success. So check that one out. It's really good. I think I'm a big fan of the belief that how you do one thing is how you do everything. So if you have a crappy morning preparation, what do you think your trade preparation is going to be like? Right? It will probably be crappy. So anywho, like, you know, that's part number one. Part two is pre-market preparation. So this is where you're looking at news, market drivers, catalysts. This is the part everyone wants to jump into without doing their preparation, their mindset, wellness first. But, you know, you're skipping an important step. So number two is, so morning mindset and wellness routine. Okay. Number two is pre-market preparation, news, market drivers, and catalysts. And this is where you're just looking around, looking to see, hey, what's pushing markets? What happened in Europe? What happened in a turn from London into US? What about turn from Asia to London, etc.?
Yeah, this is effectively the time where you're kind of, I don't want to say you're building your bias for the day, but this is kind of the time that you're using to really understand the context of what has happened overnight. I mean, granted, this, we're both traders in the US or in the New York time zone. So, you know, 9:30 a.m. Eastern time is where our trading begins, but the actual preparation for that happens, you know, an hour to 2 hours before that time, right? So the pre-market prep is effectively looking at what's happened overnight, seeing how the markets have reacted, you know, getting a general idea of what the session is going to look like. And again, this comes down to the point that the plans that you kind of make here aren't necessarily going to be, you know, in stone. I'm gonna buy at this level, sell at that level, and you just set your limits and forget it. This is more of kind of, it's a dynamic plan, right? This is what I'm looking to happen throughout the day. And this, you know, if this happens, then that. If this, then that. Right. So you're being adaptive. And I think that's one of the important parts of this category, you know, the trade idea formation part of this process.
Yeah. And it's kind of like being a first responder, right? Showing up to the scene and assessing what do we got here? What did the battle look like?
Yeah.
Not the battle, but it'd probably be a little more dark, like the car accident or whatever it is. It's like, what do we got here as you sip your coffee? Same idea. That's step two. Step number three is, in the trading process, draw your levels of support and resistance. This is the same thing. Support is demand, resistance is supply. Same concept, slight differentiation, but draw your levels of support and resistance and where you think buying momentum and selling momentum is going to peak and where you think above which it's going to increase. So this is important. These zones or levels are really the preparation for you. It's like the workout routine. This is what I'm going to do when I get to the gym. Yeah. And, you know, it's important that you come up with these without having any levels or zones. You don't really know when you're going to act. This tells you when it gets in here. Now, this is high probability. Now do something. So morning mindset, wellness, then pre-market preparation, news, market drivers, catalysts, drawing your levels of support and resistance. Step three.
Exactly. Like your levels are your blueprint, right? They kind of help keep you centered and really they keep you objective, because if you don't have a larger term view of, you know, what level should be capping the market as resistance, what level should be capping it as support, you don't really have a good understanding of, you know, the layout of what's going on, right? It's like, imagine you're going to war and the person you're going to, that's probably a bad example. Imagine you're going to a game, all right? Let's say you're going to a game, or even better, let's say you're an F1 driver, all right? Let's say one of your competitors has already had a chance to check out the course, you know, the course that you're going to be doing. They know the layouts. They know which turns you got to break earlier on. They know which turns you can break a little bit later on. And then imagine yourself coming in there, not having looked at the course in itself. Who do you think is going to do better? Who do you think is going to perform better in that race?
I'll figure it out when I show up. Man, how hard could it be? Brake, gas, it's just two pedals.
exactly, right? So like that is the whole preparation part of it. So once you've got your zones, the next step really is to wait for the market to open. All right, wait for the market to open. And now it's just a waiting game. Until the market gets into your zones, you're not really planning on doing anything. And the time between what your plan is to where you actually have to execute is where a majority of people go wrong, right? And this is always coming back to the ideas. You might have an idea that the market's gonna sell off at a certain level, and you might look to execute on that at the first sign of selling, right? But that's not necessarily a valid trade, right? A valid setup. It's confirming your hypothesis, but that doesn't mean that, you know, you've got the other four qualifiers there. So what you want to do here is wait until the market gets into your zone. Once it gets into your zone, this is now where you are qualifying the trade using those qualifiers that you've put together, right? So that kind of summarizes there the trade idea formation part of this process is, number one, the morning mindset and wellness. Two, your pre-market prep. Three is drawing out your levels. 4 is just waiting, and number 5 is qualifying. This is all the trade idea formation part. Now we get into the part where you actually execute. All right, so I'll let Georgie start this puppy off.
Yeah, so now it's go time. So, you know, like it, like you've been prepping, you've been waiting, and now you're on the ice or on the field for the first time, and people are watching, and you got to give them what they want. So now, you know, this is the part where people want to learn the most about, but this is actually the easiest. Everything here is already automated. It's already created. It's part of your system. It's part of your strategy. This is the part that a lot of people want to automate for a reason, is that it's the redundant work, to be honest with you. You know, there is something to be said for human intelligence versus AI when you're trading, but this is where you really get in and the money's made. So step number 6 and the first part of trade execution is using order flow to pick a good place to put your limit order. You don't want to just buy it or sell it at any given level. So let's say you like the long trade, it gets in your level. All of a sudden, you're like, I want to buy it here, market order. Well, that's not going to work out well because there's still going to be risks that you might take even if you're waiting for the levels. Patience for a zone is not enough in 2020. It used to be, not anymore. So now step 6 is you use order flow. You look at where is there a big bid. A bid means a big buyer on decent size. All right. Where is there sell or a buy imbalance if you're looking to get long? This is a market buy order that absorbed all the sell limits and traded on the offer. And so you're looking at these pinpointed things that we teach you all about in the trading course, by the way. You know, we unpack these a lot more, but it's simple. It's not subjective. There's just areas and things you're looking for and you do it. And then once you see that, step 7 is get in and manage your risk till you're at break even. And I didn't want to pass on 6 that quick. Mark, you got something to add?
Definitely. Right. So like Georgie said, using order flow to pick a good place to put your limit order. You know, this is a little bit more technical of a concept, but the idea here is that, you know, once you've qualified your zone, you've got something to lean on. Right. And what I mean by that is consider where you put your stop, right? Where you're getting in, the ideal position to place your stop is where there is the most amount of obstacles for the price to get to that level, right? So this is where order flow is a gem, because you're able to identify that price level almost to the tick where the majority of volume happened before, say, the market reversed. So as it comes back up into that kind of a level, you've got clues, right? This is why it's called a footprint, because it shows the actions of, you know, the bigger traders. This is where you pick that limit order, right? You want to put that order in a level where if you get filled, you've got the bigger traders ideally protecting your stop from getting triggered. And that's really the breakdown of using order flow to pick those levels. And really the benefit of this is that once you've qualified the trade, it's already a high probability setup. Now, if you can get a location in conjunction with having qualified that trade, all the better.
Yeah, Marky, like I really like that. You know, I think if you're listening to this podcast, you're one of two type of people, and there's always usually a plethora of different options, but if you're the type of person that purchases anything like this, they'll say, hey, I need a new cell phone. Now let me go compare and contrast features. Now let me go read in reviews. Now let me see where the best sales are. Let me see if I get it secondhand. Now let me read some more about the features. Oh, the sale's over. Like if you're the kind of person that loves to research things, yeah, it's going to be tough for you to do the qualification process. It's like, you know, it's really hard to make a decision. That's like just analysis paralysis. You know, if you want a phone and you're in there researching like, what kind of foam pad is the key made out of? I would argue that's kind of irrelevant. Like it's time to get the phone. By the time you research what it's, these phones take like 3 years to engineer. So by the time you really have a full comparison, a full view, it'll be 3 years. And so what I'm saying, I guess, is this, if you're somebody who goes into purchase and says like, I need a phone. All right, let me just spend like 15, 20 minutes, which would probably scare the first type of person. Like 15 minutes, you're gonna spend $1,000. It's like somebody's already done the work for me. Let me just jump in. Then you're going to be the type that goes from idea to trade much quicker. So you have to identify what kind of person are you and what are you prone to for challenges and difficulties and work within it. You don't have to avoid it. You don't have to be scared of it. Just understand it and work within those parameters. I'm more of the person that just says, F it. I like it. Let's go buy it. Like it, you know, by the time the other person's on the website comparing reviews, I'm already in the car on my way to the mall to get the phone. And, you know, that comes with its own challenges. Don't get me wrong. That's not always a good thing. But that's just my personality. I know it and I play within it.
Yeah. And I think it's great that you mentioned the fact that you don't want to be scared of it, right? Because it's based on personality. So I'm, you know, we're kind of laughing here. I don't know if you heard us, but as Georgie was explaining that, you know, I'm actually the person he was explaining. I like, if there's a phone, I'm going to be doing a whole bunch of research on it. You know, is this version good? Are people having issues with the software, et cetera, et cetera. And I know that about myself. So when it comes down to qualifying trades, the thing that I know that I had to work on at the beginning was that I needed to have a set of qualifiers that if I saw those, it's go time. You know, there's no overthinking it, because it's very easy if you're trying to, especially if you're doing discretionary style of trading, to kind of talk yourself into or out of trades. And really for me, it's like, I know what my process is. I like to have all the information before I make the decision. The reality of trading is you're never going to have all the information you need to make the decision. So at that point for me, it was, all right, which qualifiers or what information do I need to see in order to be comfortable making that decision? Right. And like G said, it's all dependent on your personality, but you've got to know these things, right? Because if I start trading the way that George does, you know, a little bit more aggressive, it's not really aligned with my personality. And I know that, and that's fine, right? But where a lot of people get lost in translation is they might see somebody like George trading his strategy, think that, you know what, that looks good because it's getting good results, so I want to do that. Only to find out that they kind of hesitate to do the same thing because it's not aligned with what they believe in, with what their personality is like, and with what their experience in the market, you know, what they want their experience to be like. So I think that was a great point that you brought up there, G.
Thanks, Marky. And if you're going to go get a phone and you're the person that just goes straight to the mall, you're probably not going to call the guy that's going to be asking you a bunch of questions you never researched on the drive to get there. And so you want to be with like-minded people. So I like that you mentioned that. It's not for everyone, but it's a good context to get you going. And then the last step of this is 8. We did 7, right? We glazed it over. Once a trade manager, the risk of your break even. Yeah, I'll tell you this. Where I focus my energy when I'm going to trade is on the risk side first. Let's say you get in and you're risking, you know, 2 points on the S&P 500 or $10 on Apple stock. Until we get to the place where the trades break even, I'm focusing more on stops. Where do I move the stop? When do I move it? You know, NASDAQ is dumping. I'm long S&P. Should I still hold this trade? I'm more interested in the risk until it's gone. Once it's gone and it's a runner, then I turn to the profit side. And I see a lot of people start with the bracket. They say, you know, where should my take profit be? Like, you still got 5 points of risk on. Why are you even looking at your take profit? Yeah. Like, before you get there, you're going to have to eliminate this risk and always start with a risk focus. So, like, you know, tighten the stop if you can, scratch the trade, get out, do whatever you need to eliminate risk as quickly as possible and effectively as possible. And that's in step 7, that's my focus, eliminate risk and then move on to the profit side.
Yeah, another great point. You know, the execution of the trade is based on qualifiers. The management of the trade should be the same, right? Because if you're going to keep things objective, then if you get into a trade, for example, based on 4 qualifiers, and then now you're in that trade, maybe one of the qualifiers is no longer present, right? Maybe you got in because you saw one of the qualifications was NASDAQ is making a tear higher. It just created a new intraday high, and you're long the spoos for a little catch-up trade, right? Amongst other things. So let's say you had 4 qualifiers, one of them being the NASDAQ correlation, right? So let's say you're in that trade and NASDAQ stops climbing and starts going sideways and actually starts pulling back, all right? Now you've got 3 of the qualifiers that got you into the trade present, All right. If you lose one or two more of those qualifiers, the reason for you being in that trade is no longer present, right? So now you have a decision. Do I scratch the trade or, you know, do I hold on to it? And if you're going to be objective, you know, you got to follow the rules. If you get in for four, if you get in with four qualifiers and half of them are gone, does that make, is that a good trade? Probably not anymore. It might have been a good trade at the time that you executed on it, but the market is a real-time auction, right? It's dynamic. And just because you got into the trade for a certain reason doesn't mean that you got to stay into that trade. You got to stay in that trade if that reason is no longer there. And I think this is also, you know, another big difference between the idea and the execution. Because similarly, how you have a trade idea and you execute on it, as it relates to risk management, you might also have the same kind of ideas, right? Maybe I should move my stop. Maybe I should do that. How about instead of what you think you should do, have some qualifiers to get you out of that trade if they're not there anymore?
Yeah, that's the idea. Like, imagine that you found out that your captain or your pilot, as soon as you got on an airplane, as soon as you got the cruising altitude, just walked beside you and started drinking with you. Like, hey, we're in the air. It's cool. Let's get messed up, you know? I would be instantly worried. It's the same idea with the trade. Once you're at cruising altitude, now you're just scanning the systems, making sure that everything's running, things going well. You're trying to identify problems potentially on a proactive basis. You're still doing work, but now it's just kind of, it's maintenance work. You're fanning the flames. You don't have to start the fire anymore if you're in the woods. Switch analogies very frequently and rapidly. But, you know, I like that. That's the way we go. And then next one is, I think we finished it. That's it. Manage the winning side of trade to run profits.
Exactly.
But, you know, this is the easy part. This is the part where everyone thinks you need to, how do I make more money? You lose less. That's start there. I have nothing to add to it. You know, the last step of the process is once the risk is off the table, look to manage and run some profits if you can. If you have the good market conditions, but don't have an expectation of the market, don't say, I want to make 10 points. You know, look to get 2 to 3 points. And then if there's potential and volatility, you could make more points always. But every time you make 10 points, you had to make two. Every time you made 2 points, it didn't go to 10. And so get paid on the way up and run some if you want to or can, if that's what your strategy calls for.
Exactly. And so moving on to really the last section here of this episode is some tips. All right. And as always, we got a bit of a list, but we're going to do this by ear because we've already mentioned a number of these throughout this episode. But let's get started. So similar to what we kind of just explained, the first real tip to help you transition from having a trade idea to actually executing is splitting that process into two jobs. And we've mentioned this on a number of different episodes. It's the idea of splitting your role as a trader between the boss and the employee, right? So the employee is the analyst. As it relates to, as it relates to what we just mentioned, analyst is the one responsible for the trade idea formation. All right. So in your role as the analyst, this is where you're doing the morning mindset. You're doing the pre-market prep, identifying your zones, and then waiting for the market to get there. As the boss, you're now qualifying the trade and you're executing it. You're managing the risk. Really, that's all that you're doing, right? A majority of the thinking part of the process happens in the formation of the trade idea, whereas the actual actions that you take as far as executing and managing the risk happen in the part where you're the boss, or rather where you're the employee, right? So rather, I think I completely messed that up. The boss is the one that makes the levels. The employee is the one that executes. Same difference, right? So the real idea at the end of the day is split it into two, right? The employee is the one executing. The boss is the one that's doing the analysis, coming up with the idea, and all the job of the employee to do is execute on the idea created by the boss. That's tip number one.
It just comes down to this. Most people think when they should be acting and act when they should be thinking. And, you know, that's where the challenge of trading in itself is that when it comes time to acting, this isn't the time to question your life and the meaning of your existence. And if you're doing something too risky, think about that the night before. When you show up, it's game time. I mean, it's time to act. So, anywho, that's point one. Just want to add that. Number two, speak your ideas out loud to hear your thoughts and become more mindful of your intentions. This is another tip. The key here is that when you talk aloud, all right, to yourself or fellow trader, you once again hear yourself. You make it understandable. And any place where there's something that doesn't sound right, you'll catch it audibly before you actually put a trade based on that information. So by observing your thoughts, you become more mindful of your intentions. And, you know, in this process, you can hear yourself talk out loud and realize a trade is not well formed, like Mark's fade. Like if, you know, or my fade, I've done fades too sometimes. And I'll be like, look, I'll short it. I get stopped out. Short it. I get stopped out. Short it. I make the two losses back on the prior two trades. And then on the fourth trade, I'm like, why the hell am I still shorting this thing? It's up like 30 points. Like, what am I doing? And you catch yourself. I'll actually say that to myself. Why the hell am I still shorting this? So talk out loud. We already spoke about some of the benefits. You know, you got to listen out loud as well. And hopefully you heard them.
Yeah, exactly. So tip number three is to journal your trade ideas as well as just your trades, right? The idea behind this one is that, you know, as traders, we're not going to catch every single move. And that's not really our goal. The idea here is that just as you would journal and review your trades, you journal and review the trade ideas you had, but maybe might have not executed on. And what the benefit of doing this is that you get an idea of your thought process, you get an idea of what you're looking at the time and how it ended up working. And you can learn a lot about trading and your actual individual processes by doing this. It's kind of like free learning without any risk.
I love that. That's fantastic. And, you know, free learning without any risk is what we want. But then we go do these sabotaging behaviors that lead to different things. Number four, tip number four, remember that not every trade is a good trade. And the problem is you won't know that in the heat of the moment. People will know, how do you know if it's a good trade or bad trade? I don't know. We're going to find out, you know, your analysis, your levels. But once you get into it, it's anyone's best guess what happens and where it goes. It's out of your control is the point. What you could already have controlled, you've already done. Now you've put the trade on. All you're doing is managing risk. I would argue that if you say, is this a good trade or a bad one? I don't know. It's too late because now you should be looking at risk management. And that same time you're asking these redundant questions and no one can answer. Go look at NASDAQ. What's it doing? Gather some more information, right? Because it might actually be time for you to get out. And while you're wondering if it's a good or bad one, the information's surfacing that's telling you it's a bad one. So it's all about real time. And the problem with new traders is that they assume it's a job to get in a good trade or to be in any trade. It's like, I just want to find a trade. If I'm not in a trade, how will I make money? But what the reality of this job is that the job is finding good trades. And good trades are ones that are according to the plan that you're doing with discipline, and they have realistic probabilities. They have an edge of being profitable. And no one else is going to be able to tell you where it's going to go or what a good trade is. Anyone who tells you what a good trade is doing it with a hindsight bias. Now, I could tell you today where to have gotten in 3 hours ago. I'll give you the low tick if you want. But in real time, there's no way that I could do that. Even when I do catch a low tick sometimes, I'm shocked. I'm like, well, I can't believe I did it that way. Like, you know, you got to let go of the expectation that there's a good trade and that every one of them you're looking for is perfection. It's not. You're just looking for something. Give it a shot. Take a shot at the end of the day. And it could be worth it. You might miss, but you're going to learn regardless.
Yeah, exactly. Great point. And, you know, just to add to that, the tip that we gave you guys before, number three on journaling your trade ideas, not just your trades, this can kind of help you understand that, you know, not every idea is going to be a good trade. So when it actually comes time to take the trade, if you've got kind of like a journal, you've got a case study of prior examples of what's happened, when it worked out, when it didn't, and what you're seeing in front of you is maybe very similar to some of the examples you have in your case studies of what it looked like when it worked out. You don't know that that's going to be a good trade, but you have a general idea that the last time XYZ came in into confluence, this was the result. Am I seeing XYZ similarly here? Yes. Okay. Not to say that you can expect the exact same result, but you're giving yourself the higher probability that it's going to work out in your favor than not. So tip number five is that, you know, just kind of piggybacking on tip number four, there is no perfect trade, right? A lot of the times people wait for the perfect setup. And I actually remember something that when I was starting out and I was messaging George, and I don't remember what the ticker was at the time, but I remember sending it over to George and being like, hey, these are my thoughts on this ticker. This is what I think can happen. And then George literally replied back to me and he said, this trade looks so perfect that it's probably not going to work out.
Right? And like, I remember that, yeah.
And I remember that, and it had me thinking. I'm like, wait, if it's so perfect, wouldn't you want to jump on it every single time? But you kind of got to flip it on its head. If it's, you know, it's the concept of if it's too good to be true, it probably is. Same idea applies here. There's not going to be a perfect trade. More times than not, you're always going to have pros and cons to taking a trade, right? And this is where the qualifiers come in. If the pros of taking that trade outweigh the potential cons, right? And what I mean by this is if you're looking to get in the trade and you've got good stop protection, you've got no obstacles in the way of your, you know, your initial profit target, the market conditions are favorable, you know, all these things combined, this is what lines up to make a good trade. But that's not to say that it's going to be a perfect trade, right? Like Georgie said, by the time it looks perfect, it's probably either too late or you've already been stopped out. So just remember, guys, no such thing as a perfect trade, only good trades.
Yeah, and the problem with perfect is that people confuse perfect with risk-free, like perfect being a trade where I can make a lot of money and not risk anything. And by the time that happens, retail investors have watched a 100-point move and finally convinced themselves to jump in. Because now with their eyes, they could see something and they believe they could get another 100. It never works that way. It just drops. By the time it looks perfect, it's perfectly okay to not be in it. Get out. Like, just go to the sidelines and you'll probably get a better entry. If it's looking so perfect, there's too many people along, you'll be able to catch some stops on the way down. Number six, all three of them are sort of tied together. Only thing that's 100% certain is the past, but it's not going to make you any money. You know, it's like visiting someone's house, like a grandpa's house, like back in my day, and it's a cool story and everything, but so what? Those days are over. It's like, you know, you could relive the memory of it, but the past will never make you any money. The real money and opportunities in the current and the present, and I would say not even in the future. It's all here in the present. There is no future. It may not happen. So the only time you ever know how a trade will work out is once it's done. So focus more on reading real-time order flow, reading price action, reading the auction, you know, analyzing your levels, and less time on trying to predict the future. Because the reality is, if you could only make money when you were right, I wouldn't be in this business. It'd be horrible business. You know, if I wanted to be in the business of ego and being right, I'd go be a doctor, I'd go be a lawyer, because then the money is in being right. Like, no offense, it's true, right? Like, yep. Your doctor's not going to say, hey, there's a 40% chance you're going to die. He's going to say there's a 60% chance I'm going to do this good. And so for me, though, as a trader, it's the opposite. I'm like, there's a 40% chance you're going to get this wrong. And so you don't have to be right. This isn't a business that you have to be right in it. That's the beauty and the benefit of it, is that you can make money when you're wrong and you can lose money when you're right. If you only made money when you were right, statistically, you got a 33% chance of being right. Because everyone says the market either goes up or down, right? Nope, it could stay sideways. That's a loss of capital. That's a loss of opportunity cost. You could have done other stuff with that money. So really, if you had to be right, you're betting on a 33% chance. And that ain't a winning strategy. So you have to remove the fact that, you know, the past is irrelevant. It's the present. So remember that. That's really, really important.
And finally, tip number seven here, guys, is, you know, to kind of put everything together. It's to simply practice the process until you create a flow that works for you. All right. And, you know, nowadays, a lot of the software platforms we use, they offer a feature called a replay mode. All right. And what you can do with chart replays is you can effectively go back to a certain session or a certain time of day, and you can replay that as if you were sat there watching it live. And the idea in this process is to work on repeating the steps that we've discussed earlier. All right. How would you set up for the morning? How would you draw your levels, etc.? And now when you're in replay, you can see how your ideas, you know, how your ideas form and whether you take the execution or not, right? What you're going to do is repeat the process until the transition between the trade idea and executions feels seamless and fluid. Repetition is key until it becomes a habit, and, you know, eventually it'll become second nature to the point where you don't even have to think about it. It's just a reaction. All right. So if you suddenly feel fear when you're about to trade, it just means that you haven't practiced enough and that it's a confidence issue due to feeling incompetent. The best solution to that, put in the time, see the strategy work, and develop that confidence to do it live.
Love it. It's like if let's use hockey because I miss it so much. I really want to play shitty murky, but I can't. I might make a little backyard rink. Come on over.
I like it.
What's the job in hockey? Take the shot. Let's say your offense, take the shot. And so if you haven't practiced it, how the heck are you going to know how to take a shot? You're not. It's going to be a pathetic shot, and somebody's going to look at you and say, you're not taking another one because I got 10 other people that could do it better, that give us better probability. Same thing with this. Practice the process to the point or process to the point that you equate get the puck, take the shot. Find the trade, take the trade. That part has to become almost systematic, like flow. You can't think too much in it. You know, you have to get to the point where it becomes routine, that whole process in itself, and you remove the thought out of it, because when you're in a professional sport, there's nobody out there thinking. They're just doing it. It's a reaction. It's almost like a muscle cell memory, and you have to practice it till you get to that point, and you use the feature that Mark mentioned, the replay, to the point it becomes second nature. And what happens is there is no more analyst and trader. Now it all just meshes into one. It's like you're multiple personality disorder is finally healed, and it's all blended and integrated into one.
Yeah, that was a great example you brought up, and it brought me back to, you know, an experience when I was playing hockey, and it's kind of like everybody, you know, each forward dreams about getting that breakaway in a big game, right? Few often think about what they'll do if that's actually the case. You know what I mean? We're always so excited to get that breakaway pass until you get the breakaway pass. And then you're like, oh my God, I actually got the pass. What am I going to do now? You know? And right. And it's like, I don't know.
The moment is here.
Exactly. Like, the moment is here. And if you haven't practiced, like in this example with the breakaway in hockey, if you don't have, you know, an arsenal of deeks, they're called, you know, moves to kind of fake out the goalie, you're going to be on the spot there. And, you know, from my own experience, whenever I hadn't really practiced, you know, breakaways or shootouts, and I got that breakaway pass, more often than not, I'd scuff it, right? Yeah. Because I wasn't prepared for the actual reality of getting that breakaway. So I think that's a great segue to close out this episode, is to build up the habits to the point where it becomes a second nature. You don't think about it. It's just there. So
can you say one thing quick? Yeah. When you watch a friend in shitty, like skating through five people and then going back to the blue line, doing it again, what are you thinking in your mind? Just like shoot the effing puck. Like, that's what everyone's thinking. Just take the shot. We'll get the rebound. We'll clean up some dirty garbage in front of that, and we'll put one on the board.
But exactly.
No, that one person wants to try to make it fancy and all sexy. That's trading in a nutshell. Just shoot the freaking puck. Take a shot. It's worth it. You know, worst case, you get a rebound and bury it home. But if you don't take the shot, I guarantee you're not going to score.
Exactly.
All the shots you don't take, Wayne Gretzky.
Exactly. He nailed it there, guys. And that's going to be a wrap for today's episode, Trade Pros. Thank you guys so much for taking the time to listen. If you guys can think of one person, just one person in particular that might find today's message helpful in their trading journey, please go ahead and share it with them. As always, guys, if you enjoy listening to this podcast, we put a lot of work into these episodes, and we'd appreciate if you guys can drop us a rating and a review on iTunes. It's really going to help us get this message out to global community of traders. Until next time, everyone, good luck and good trading. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Mind Over Market podcast. You can find us at tradeproacademy.com.